Mr. Bill Bates, Real 2. And we're talking about the German air raids starting in 1940. Yeah. What about the ones that bombed you out? First, you were bombed out of work quite early, weren't you? Could you tell us about what exactly happened there?
Well, all I know is there'd been one or two raids, and I went into work on this particular morning just to see the big gates at the front of the building blown out and the tarpaulin just inside. I found out that was the watchman who'd been killed. The building itself was completely shattered. You know, as far as I know, it was never rebuilt. That's as much as I can remember. I just remember.
What happened to your work, though? I mean, did they relocate, or?
Well, I don't really know. From there, I can't remember. We were. Well, not actually bombed out, but the house was damaged.
Your work. Well, you know, your workplace was smashed. Where did you work after that? Did you get another job, or did they move their operations?
Well, I don't know whether they shut down, closed down, or moved, because as I say, about that time we was also damaged.
You were right. Oh, tell me about that then. What happened? Were you in the house when it happened?
No, I wasn't. No. But when the house was fractured, the back walls of the house was fractured. And and the furniture was damaged by the water and so on and so forth. And we went down to Windsor for a few weeks to, while we got somewhere else to live. I can't remember how long we stayed. Not too long, anyway.
And how did you feel about being bombed out?
Well, there were so many people bombed out. It was a recognised thing, you know. It was going to be your turn sometime or the other. And so many houses were damaged and so many tarpaulins over roofs. But it was a wonderful time for the kids, because playing on the bomb site and building their own little houses and shelters and so on and so forth, they had a wonderful time, you know. Really did. Complete freedom.
Now, what happened when you came back from Windsor? Where was your next house?
Next house was in Massingham Street.
Where's that? Is that Stepney as well?
Stepney as well, yes. That was not quite as good as the first house, but we stayed there until... It was in the family until about 12 years ago, anyway. And they had to...
So that no bomb. That wasn't bombed at all?
It was damaged. The back wall was damaged on that one. And that had to be rebuilt.
And anything else about the air raids that you remember?
Well, I can remember Dad getting very annoyed because he couldn't get at them, running along the road, and he's throwing his tin hat at them. And the language wasn't too good either. But Dad was the local chief of the wardens round in that area. He was chief warden. He wore a white hat instead of a steel one.
So he's ARP... volunteer, or warden.
Warden, yes.
What did he have to do then?
Well, he made sure everybody was at their station. Everybody had to do so many nights a week. He went every night to see they were on duty, see the syrup pumps were working, and then they were given a trolley with an engine on it, a compressor, I think it was. He had to make sure that was kept maintained.
And anything else that you recall? Where were you working then?
I was working at Mallinson's at the time.
That was
the plywood company.
Plywood company, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think the most... during the first days of the war, we were digging a shelter for some Jewish people that lived further down the road. When Dad heard the noise, I didn't. It was like a rustling and tearing of silk or something like that. And he threw me down the hole we was digging, and the bomb landed about 150 yards up the road. And after we'd finished digging that day, and we was on our way home, another warning went, and a bomb was dropped in Cephas Street and Osier Court, which is in Stepney. And he heard them coming before I did and threw me in the classroom, busted my nose, and covered himself over. But that was the ones I remember most. But, the big fire blitz, I was up in town then.
What do you remember that?
Well, I can remember walking, I don't know what I was doing up there, from Allgate, right through the Mullin Road to get home. And most places were on fire or roofs were burning. It was just, everything was red.
Were you scared?
No. No, it's, I don't know. It just wasn't. I wasn't brave, but it was something that was happening, and you just accepted it. Nothing else you could do, really.
Now, so you were working at Mallet's at the plywood factory, and that wasn't hit?
No, as far as I know, it's still there.
And when were you called up? Or is that the next thing that would be
done? No, I volunteered.
You volunteered?
Yeah. I volunteered for Navy Boy Service when I was about 16 and a half, something like that.
So that'd be 1942?
Yeah. They took me in beginning of 43, about April 43.
Now, where did you go? You were still a boy then?
I was a boy, yeah.
Where did you go?
They sent me to, I can't remember. Well, after Skegness, I went there for basic training.
There's a shore station. What do you remember of your reception then? You'd gone there a boy, you'd done some home guard training, mm-hmm. Yeah, and you'd done a bit with the ARP, but you were still essentially a civilian. How did they take you in, you know, and sort of start, you know, on the first couple of days when they kicked you out?
Well, they seemed to leave us to our own devices for the first day anyway. We were wandering around not knowing what to do. It wasn't until they allocated us a leading seaman that he started to get us organised. But I know they weren't prepared for us to arrive. There was no food for us, and we all had long journeys. And we had one blanket, and I remember we were out on the seashore. It was none too comfortable in the chalet.
Now, it wasn't old Butlin's or whatever.
Butlin's old camp, yeah.
What was the accommodation like? Can you describe the chalets? Because everybody knows them now. A lot of them have been pulled down.
They were wooden garden huts, is all you could describe them. With a window in it. They had that sort of shiplap covering, one piece of wood overlapping another. And one window, there was bunk beds, one on top of the other, so you could sleep four. Nothing on the floor at all, just bare wood. Very, very thin, very, very hard mattress. And one blanket, no pillow. And very, very drafty. The actual place itself. Oh, it did have a little bit of an emblem or something carved into the apex over the door. That made it more Butlin.
Now, if we look at your training there, sort of take a typical day and sort of try and weave the bits and bobs in. What time would your day start? How did the day start?
I think Wakey Wake was about 6 o'clock. Might have been a bit earlier. We had parade outside the chalet to make sure we was all there. The leading seaman would come down and check us all off. From that was a cold water wash. Most of us couldn't shave or didn't shave or weren't able to shave, you know, so we would go from there to breakfast, which we had to queue for.
Well, let's have a look at breakfast. What sort of food did you get for each meal, and what did you think of it?
Well, all I can remember getting is bread and jam. And sometimes, if we're lucky, a couple of spoonfuls of porridge. That's all I can remember ever having.
For breakfast?
For breakfast,
yeah. What about, we'll skip on, so I'll come. What about lunch and tea?
Lunch, Very, very little. There was meat there. They described it as meat, but probably one or two potatoes and a couple of tablespoonfuls of some vegetable. Very, very, not enough to keep a youngster going anyway.
Was it good quality?
Oh, it was pretty fair, yes. I think for the amount of people that were in the camp, there were thousands, they did a very good job. But of course, it wasn't sufficient.
And what about tea? What would you get for tea?
Once again, it was a slice of bread and jam and a cup of tea, which wasn't really sufficient. I know I was always hungry, very hungry.
Now, going back into the... So after breakfast, what would happen after breakfast?
After breakfast, we'd muster on the quarterdeck, so they called it. It was near the flagpole anyway. And we would do arms drill.
Foot drill?
Yeah.
How did you take to drill? You'd already done army drill, but...
Oh, very well. That came second nature to me, having these ex-army First World War blokes.
Was it any different from army drill?
Well, the leading seaman that we had, he was an old boy from the First World War too, and he knew all the ropes and the tricks, and he knew what he expected. And by fair means or foul, he got what he wanted, you know. And I think we were a pretty smart mob in the end.
Did you like drill? Or did you find it boring?
I didn't mind it at all, really. It was something to take your mind off, I think, anyway.
Did you understand why you had to do so much of it?
I asked him on one occasion that very same question, actually. I said, why? He said, well, it's to make you obey an order as soon as you get it. That was his answer to me. He said, if I tell you to come to attention, you come immediately to attention. And that's what the drill was for, to make you obey an order without question, immediately.
That's
Buckingham,
true.
His name was. He was one. Everybody knows Buckingham. Leading seaman Buckingham.
I'll perhaps come back to him. Now, what about PT? Do you have PT sessions
yes,
in the morning?
The people who took us through physical training, they were PTIs, they called them, physical training instructors. They were muscles and very, very tough guys, and they used to try and get us to do impossible things like climbing ropes and all the rest of it, which we weren't used to. And they were fairly strict.
What sort of exercises did they put you through?
Well, they were bars fixed to the walls, which we had to run up and down and come down the sideways and all the rest of it. Climbing ropes was another thing.
Swedish exercises, they called it then, you know, all the arms out and stretching.
Oh, yes, the normal one, which I found a bit feminine, actually. I did like that.
Was there any milling, boxing?
No, not there. There wasn't, no.
And what about route marches?
Well, we used to do one to the local village, I can't remember, Pebble Mill. We used to do. What we would do, we would double for, say, 5 minutes or so, then we'd march for 5 minutes, and we'd do this there and back with a rifle.
Now, how tough did you find this PT, physical training?
It came very easy, actually.
You were fit enough?
Yeah, I think I was training at the Repton, and I'd always been a good walker, and so it came fairly easy to me.
What about weapons training? Because although you were the Navy, you'd get the rifle training.
Yeah, believe it or not, I had no weapons training as such while I was in the Navy.
Was that a surprise to you? Or?
Well, it was. We weren't issued with things like cold water gear when we went up north. Or we weren't given any personal armament at all.
So you'd have no weapons training at all, except, I mean, you'd had it in the army, in the Home Guard, but...
Whether it's because I was ex-Home Guard, because they knew that anyway before I went in, I got shunted off to...
Hang on, what about seamanship? I was still at Skegness, Royal Arthur, any seamanship there?
We had a bit of a knot, you know, tying knots, which I promptly forgot. The only thing I could do was tie my shoelace. But, no, we did have a little training in tying knots and things, which...
Was it just with rope, or did you do it with wire as well?
No, just rope.
And any other seamanship there? Boxing the compass? Cutter work?
No, not at all.
That was only the only thing for a sailor, as far as you could see, was this knot?
Yes.
How long were you there?
Oh, I don't know.
You got there about April 43.
Could only have been about a month or so. Not much, as far as I can remember.
And then where did you go then?
Well, they sent us to HMS Shrapnel, which was a stone frigate, an establishment in Glasgow.
And what was HMS Shrapnel? It was a shore establishment, but what were you doing there?
We only used that building for sleeping purposes and living purposes. The school, the college we attended, was the Marconi School of Radio in another different part of Glasgow. That's where we did our Morse training and telegraphy.
Well, what did you start with?
Well, we started with simple vowels, you know.
Actually, I should have asked, how did they pick you for this? Was there an assessment of what you were good at and what you weren't?
You see, my brother-in-law, he'd been a telegraphist in the Navy. He gave me the basic details of Morse code, which I worked on and practiced, and I got fairly well up. I think I was a little bit advanced than the rest of them, the guys that went up there.
And that had you done an assessment test or?
Yes, they gave us all sorts of tests to see whether we were suitable for becoming telegraphists.
Do you remember what the tests were?
Yeah, I can remember some of it. The first one was on gears, which was the size gear, was it the big gear, the big gears that was gave you the pressure to pull the small gears and all the rest, things like that. I can't remember.
But that kind of thing?
Yeah, that kind of thing, just general knowledge, I suppose.
And you were all right?
Yeah, I got through that okay.
So how did this start training? Did this start on Morse?
Straight away, yes, we were rushed into that the first day.
And how did they train you?
Well, there was a classroom all fixed up with Morse keys. We all had our own call sign. The instructor would be in front, obviously, and he would call us up and, with a little message, and we had to answer.
And how did you do? You'd obviously got a head start, you said.
Yeah, I got a pretty good start on that. I did pretty well on that. I was pleased.
Do you know what speed you got up to?
I think of 22, 23, something like that. Around about that figure, anyway.
And could you send as fast as you could listen? Or
Yes. I can still, even to this day, send almost as fast as I can hear or read. I do that sometimes with some friends. I do their name in Morse instead of. And if I am lucky enough to pick up shortwave on the radio, I try to read it.
Now, you were trained as a wireless telegraphist, is that right?
My official rank was ordinary telegraphist.
Ordinary telegraphist. Now, what else did you... So that's the Morse code. What else did they train you in?
Nothing at all. Oh, yes, they did. They did a little bit of coil changing for changing frequencies and wavelengths.
What does that mean?
Well, these sets in the old days, of course, nothing like they are today. And if you wanted to change frequency or different bandwidth, you had to take these coils from the radio and insert others in order to change the band. They taught us that, how to charge an accumulator, battery training, how to mix the acid, and general things like that. And plenty of practice in receiving and sending.
In this wireless, you know, the actual bits of the wireless, how it worked, did they actually teach you how a wireless worked so that you understood what all the parts were doing?
No, not really. We had a radio mechanic on board most ships who did all the maintenance. So basically they told us not to go near that valve because it had a top cap and it would blow your finger off. That's the sort of advice you've got. But
you weren't learning the other sorts of signalling that a signaller would have done, like semaphore or Morse or lights. We did Morse. Light. Did you do any of them?
Did lights. They did by Aldis. But Not very much at all. No. We were to the fist as such, and that was it.
And sorry, anything else about your time at HMS Shrapnel?
No, once again, as I say, we were boys, still boys then, ranked as boys then, so there was no all-night leave or anything like that. In fact, it was about 7 months before I got any leave at all.
Now, something I haven't asked before, how did you get on with the other lads?
Pretty well. Most of them were London boys, but I sort of teamed up with a Glaswegian and another one who came from Dunfermline. So I know. I do know, because my sidekick, Tony Newman, picked a fight with one of this Glaswegian, and I went in and stopped it, otherwise it would have been massacre. And from then on, these two Scots seemed to take a liking. It was very handy, because on weekends we would go to Dunfermline to have Sunday lunch. And so that came very handy.
Was there any bullying amongst the recruits, or
not in all the years I was there did I see any sort.
And what about the leading the instructors? Both camps we'll look at, but you know, how good were they?
Well, the one we had at Glasgow was absolutely hopeless. I don't know whether I should say this, but I think he was an alcoholic. There was something wrong with him, definitely, anyway.
How did it show itself?
Well, hesitancy, shakes, and quavers in his voice. He wasn't somebody who could hold your attention for any length of time.
Did he know his stuff?
And no, I don't think he did, because we found out afterwards he should have been teaching us the technical side as well, which he wasn't. He was an ex-wireless operator off one of the big liners. Don't know which one, but he was a first or second or third operator, I don't know.
Was there anybody else? You only had one, did you, at HMS Shrapnel?
Yes.
What about the ones back at, I know it's going back, but at Royal Arthur, what were the instructors like there? I should have asked you then. But
well, there was no Morse there, it was just arms.
No, but just the instructors generally, you know.
Oh, the instructors, we had just the one, Buckingham, and he was great.
What was so good about him, where the other one was useless?
Well, he was a father figure, I suppose. You could go to him if he was in trouble, and he would never be too busy to help. And he'd guide you, and he'd do it the right way, what we used to call the pusser way, the Navy way. And he was always right. And if you noticed you was feeling off colour, like I had vaccine fever while I was there. And we used to do fire washing while we was there, on top of these very flimsy sheds. And he noticed that I was a bit pale, and so on and so forth. And he picked it up. What's wrong with you? Go down the bay. You know, he would be that interested where most of them weren't.
And what about officers? Did you see much of them?
Not at Skagness, no.
Shrapnel?
There, we came across those because we had to do guard duty outside their mess room. The ward room, as they call it.
What do you remember of that?
Well, I remember that the skipper, who was an ex-First World War man with a big bushy beard, came down this spiral staircase into the basement where he had his office, and he asked me for my paybook and to see it. And I hadn't written my religion in there, so he put me on a charge for not having my religion on. And when I went in front of him, he said, "Why?" So I said, "Well, you know, I'm not really religious, so I can't call myself a Catholic, and I can't call myself Church of England, so I thought it was better to put nothing." He said, "Go away, my boy. You're a better man than I am." I got away with it.
And anything else about your time at Shrapnel? How long were you there?
I can't.
Approximately.
Couple of months or so, I suppose.
So, to about July?
Round about then, yeah, I think.
And what happened then?
Well, it transferred me back down to, in front of the other blokes, down to Chatham. I was there for
Chatham Barracks?
Barracks, yeah. And I was only there for a few weeks, or couple of weeks or so. I can't remember, to be honest. And I got a draft to HMS Goodall.
So, what about anything happened at Chatham, or was it just a...
No, it was just that you were sculling around, just trying to find something to do. The only thing that was Chatham, they had big tunnels where everybody went to sleep down the tunnels. I refused to go down there, I didn't like them. So I used to sneak into the gym and sleep on the coconut mats. That's where we was allowed shore leave, most nights anyway, so we used to get out of the barracks as quickly as we can. But my introduction to Chatham was arriving through the main gates, going to the drill hall, went to walk to the other side, and a jaunty, as we call them, like police say, yelling at me, "Double!" I didn't realise that was a quarter deck. So I got, I did get a telling off for that. And I couldn't understand why he said double. I had a kit bag, an attache case, and a hammock. I was trying to double with this lot, and it was slipping all over the place. Buckets of sweat.
Now, when you got this post to HMS Goodall, where was HMS Goodall? She hadn't been properly built then, had she? So, did you go out to America?
No. She just come back from somewhere. I can't remember where she'd been. I was billeted in the, I think it was Littlewoods, the football ball people. I was billeted in there for a couple of days while until she arrived. And she came.
Now, we've got a little bit of slippage on our dates that we think. So I think if we take it all of these dates as being just sometime in 1943-44. But you know that you joined the Goodall sometime in 1944, round about D-Day time.
Yeah.
So that's obviously May, June 1944. June.
I came out of boy service then.
And but you don't know how long you've been at Chatham.
I can't recall, to be honest.
Now, what were your first impressions of the Goodall when you joined her at Gladstone?
I was as proud could be. The impression was that she was a superb ship. I didn't know at the time that she was American, but it was the first flush deck destroyer I'd ever seen, and she really was beautiful to look at. Yeah, I joined her at about 5 o'clock in the morning. Pouring rain.
And what was your? You were an ordinary telegraphist. What was your mess deck like? Your mess, rather.
Remarkably, it was packed. I suppose, 30, 40 square yards, and it was absolutely packed. But
whereabouts was it on the ship?
Right under the bridge. Well, there was a bridge, the wireless office, then the wardroom, then us.
And this, what was the mess called? Did it have a name, or was it just a telegraphist mess?
It was a communications mess.
And what was it like inside? Could you describe it a bit more?
Well, it was a mixture of bunks with dark green plastic covers. The bunks were about 3 high, so you had about 18 inches to slide in them. And
what did you think of the bunks? Because you hadn't been to sea, though, so it was you never had a hammock, had you?
Well, I never had a hammock, never had one of that sort of bunks either. But
what did you think of the bunks?
Well, I thought they were rather posh, for a ship of the line. And I thought they were cat's whiskers, as it were. But I was quickly told that you only get a bunk after you've been on board for certain length of time.
So what did you have at first then?
I had a hammock all the time, actually. I was the youngest one on board, so I got the hammock that was near the companionway and near the hatch,